Illness, or NAMI, Tennessee, a broadcast that explores the world of mental illness and its impact on the family, society, and the individual. We come your way live from the studios of Radio Free Nashville each Wednesday from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time. It is our hope that you will be encouraged, enlightened, and maybe even entertained from the stories of our guests. The NAMI Radio Hour is a production of NAMI, Tennessee. To contact the show, send an email to info@namitn.org. And now, here's your host, NAMI Tennessee Executive Director, Jeff Fladen.
Good morning, and as always, thank you, Vic Moore, for the introduction to the NAMI Radio Hour, and we are live at a beautiful late summer August morning, coming to you from just outside of Nashville, Tennessee. We have a guest today, Tony Cowan, who is an emerging NAMI leader, NAMI education teacher, poet, many other things. We'll talk to him in just a minute, but before we do, I want to mention that we are right now about 1 month away from the NAMI Tennessee Convention. And the NAMI Tennessee Convention takes place on the 27th and 28th of September at the Inn at Opryland. And we really hope to see every listener and your family and friends and relatives and neighbors at the convention, because we think it's really a tremendous opportunity to share understanding and awareness of mental illness and how it impacts individuals and families and communities. We have a number of speakers. We have keynote speakers as well as workshops and many exhibitors. And what's unique about this convention is the diversity of participation. So we have people living with a mental health diagnosis that are speakers, peer presenters, or those just that are sharing learning from living with a diagnosis. We think those voices are valuable and not heard often enough. And we have family members and caregivers that are loved ones of somebody with a mental health diagnosis, and how mental illness impacts the family and how people can cope and be a help for their loved one with something that can be really challenging, which I mentioned mental illness. It's not one thing. There's many different sets of symptoms and diagnoses, but it can be difficult and challenging. And then we have trained professionals as well. And the NAMI Convention is something where people can learn, we think, from folks from different perspectives, and they educate each other. So you can see information about the convention at our webpage, namitn.org. That's namitn.org, or Google NAMI Tennessee. And the information is there, as well as a link to register. So please do that. And if you're thinking of coming, the price does go up after August 31st. So please don't delay, and hope to see you there. I also want to mention, if you go to the NAMI Tennessee webpage, that we have a link at the bottom for the NAMI Tennessee e-news. And the e-news lets you know about things like upcoming teacher trainings, various events, information about what NAMI Tennessee is doing, such as we have a Train the Trainer program coming up that's about mental health parity. And mental health parity is laws, federal laws and state laws, to prevent discrimination by health insurance companies for mental illness and addiction. We believe that people should get the benefits that they pay for, and that's sometimes been challenging. So we have a Train the Trainer session, which is really good for people that can present to others about how to make a complaint and what is mental health parity. It's something we've fought for in the mental health community for many, many years. That's on the 26th of September. We also have other teacher trainings coming up, and check out the e-news. So I wanted to get through that, and now spend the rest of our time visiting with our guest, Tony Cowan, who has come here from Robertson County in the town of Springfield, Tennessee. So, Tony, good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Jeff.
And I had a 50-50 chance with the mic. Let's try good morning again.
Okay. Good morning, Jeff.
Oh, that's not doing it either. Okay. Try one more time.
All right. I'm here, Jeff.
There we go.
Right.
Okay. Tony Cowan is somebody that I've met in the last year. You're fairly new to NAMI. Let's start with that, if you would, please. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you've come to be associated with NAMI.
Well, my story is a long road leading to NAMI. I've lived my entire life with mental illness. I grew up in a household in which, as children, my brothers and I learned to sort of stay in the background and tiptoe around because my parents were mentally ill. And we were, in fact, my first memory of visiting a hospital was about the age of 7 or 8, and my mother had been hospitalized for what they then called a nervous breakdown, and later we realized was an episode of psychosis. And as an 8-year-old, I wasn't able to visit her while she was in the psychiatric ward at Vanderbilt, but I did get to play on those very smooth terrazzo floors that they have in the hospitals. And so
childhood memory,
and I don't know what side of the chart you would put that on in terms of your best or worst childhood memories. But actually, my brother and I, even at 8 and 4, had, as I said, gotten so accustomed to tiptoeing around in the background of mental illness that we could be trusted to be left alone in a waiting room in a hospital. Mm. So that was the kind of thing. By the time I was a teenager, I had several incidents in which I had to literally talk my mother out of a locked bathroom when she had taken a gun in and threatened suicide. And so that was our childhood. I had an older brother who escaped home as soon as he could to get away from it. By the time I was in college, I developed my own issues and wound up with a mental health diagnosis of my own, which I continue to deal with through life, because recovery from mental illness, just as recovery from anything else, is a lifelong thing. But it's something that you can recover, and you can contribute. You can be a member of, as they say, of society. My son, at age 23, had a psychotic break or an episode of psychosis, and he is currently in my conservatorship, lives with me at home, and so I'm daily living with treating someone with a lived experience. I've worked in the social work field for many years. I had been aware of NAMI. Being male, I guess, and a social worker, I went many years assuming, well, I can handle this, all these issues, not a problem. But at one point in my life, after my wife died and my son was at the height of his mania, I decided that I would try to reach out to a support group. I had been through a couple for a grief after my wife's death. I found out, hey, these are pretty good deals, so I'm going to give NAMI a try. Wound up joining a support group in Davidson County, which I've now been a member of for 2 years. And as I told you in my little bio that I sent you, it sounds a little bit dorky, I guess, but I really attribute NAMI and the activities that I've become involved in with NAMI with bringing me back to life. I'm 73 years old, and it's not too late. So.
Well, you're up and moving around, and we appreciate that. And we have some similar stories in our background, and we find this with NAMI that pretty much everybody that we see has their own history with diagnosis or family history or both. And I had mental illness with both of my parents but did not have the gun in the bathroom story. I just can't imagine as a child how frightening that had to have been.
Well, the thing of it is, you realize that while they took my mom away to treat her, there was nothing for the family.
Right, that was my experience, you know, as well.
There at no time, everything was focused strictly on the patient,
mm-hmm.
and not realizing that really the rest of the family is a patient too. And so there was nothing then, and even in more recent years, in the time that I was reaching out in to NAMI, the system still pretty much functions that way.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm thinking now still about the childhood part, hearing your story. So my father was a physician, but people thought he was a psychiatrist, which he was not, just because of his unusual way of behaving and relating with people. He had bipolar disorder, and people sensed, well, there's something different, and they thought he was a psychiatrist because, you know, it's a head doctor,
mm-hmm.
and there's something going on with this guy's head. So my mother was more depression, so that had less of an impact on community relationships and what friends thought, but sometimes it was not comfortable bringing people home.
Well, it's not, and people don't know what to say. They don't know how to react. That's something that I run into even today, but you can imagine 60 years ago when my mom had, things had become so bad that my parents chose to separate. We're living in a very rural environment. My mom chooses to go to bed and stay there as her way of dealing with it. So there I am, 11, and an 8-year-old brother. And that's how we became so skilled in self-help techniques, because we learned to cook. We learned to do it all to take care of ourselves.
I learned to go to Burger Chef. You remember Burger Chef?
Oh, yeah.
And they're gone.
Well, so much is gone, isn't it? But anyway. Yeah. Well, you do. I guess if you had to make a chart of pros and cons, I'm not sure that would be a pro necessarily, that you were forced at an early age to learn self-help skills for that kind of reason. But anyway, that.
Well, I think the point that you bring up is that if you have parents with severe mental illness, and I say severe, like more than anybody can feel anxiety or have some down days, but if it's pervasive over time, it impacts parenting, which is another reason why it's important to recognize if there's an issue and get some help, because we're learning now with the studies of children, with the ACEs studies about the adverse childhood episodes, that these trauma kind of things impact well-being, and we can do better with that. So did your parents, your mother went to treatment, but did she like stay in treatment in between? And did your father ever go to treatment?
My father chose to deal with it by staying at work all the time and drinking when he wasn't at work.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't mean to imply my parents were, quote, bad people in any way. And as time has gone on, struggling with illness. And, it's even in that day, well, and even today, recently I was at a meeting, started to make this point a little bit earlier in talking about stigma, and I was at a meeting just in the last couple of weeks in which I was with a coalition and looking to partner and provide our availability wraparound to some program services, and I was able to share my story, didn't dwell on it, but pointed out that I have a mental health diagnosis. And even in this group of professional people, it's like, oops, you could see the physical reaction. What do we say to him? How do we react to that?
So while it's so very common that many, many people, we say 1 in 5 have a mental health issue, but when you disclosed it in a group of professionals, like we see a musician say, well, I have bipolar, but this was on a more local, personal level, people were not sure how to react.
Not sure what to say. And sometimes they don't have to say anything. It's not that you're... Sometimes I question my own motives when I do reveal. I don't just go out and stand on the street corner and as the street preachers do and announce it. But if the situation seems appropriate, then I'm willing to share. And part of that for me has become my increasing dedication to NAMI's focus right now on removing the stigma. You know, how do we work toward, you mentioned parity. To me, it's kind of all part of the same issue, except that I know that, well, in schools when we cut arts and music, and so now in health treatment we cut mental health. I guess we're It's interesting to me that arts and music seem to be some of the best treatment for mental health. But anyhow, that's another workshop.
But let's go back to your story. So you had your wife was passing away, and your mm-hmm. son was manic, and then you found NAMI.
Okay.
But many people come to NAMI. You have, I'm trying to think the right term, really blossomed as a volunteer and advocate. You've become very dedicated to NAMI. I'm sure I can't imagine the amount of time in the last year you've spent. What is it about NAMI that's resulted in you doing that?
I think the first trigger that when you go to a support group, it just helps to know you're not by yourself. You're not alone. And we say that in NAMI, we say that a lot, you know, you're not alone. Well, it became very real for me in the support group. And then at one point, I remember during a particular meeting, we were talking about self-care, and that it just flipped a switch for me. That's about a year ago. It flipped a switch for me at that point that through all this journey of my own, that I had never, ever considered the issue of taking care of myself and the importance of self-care. And of course, we preach that a lot, too. I just finished training for the family-to-family class, and we repeated that mantra 100 times, that you just have to, as something, of course, that we'll be getting across to our families that we work with. But I remember the date that triggered, and that set me on a whole new avenue of thinking about, okay, what do I want to do with this? And as time evolved, or I evolved through time, into really embracing the benefit that I was getting from taking care of myself, returning to my writing, returning to music, then what am I going to do with this? I'm 73 years old. I may have another 20 years. My dad's family tends to live that long. So I'm completely dedicated now to paying it forward with NAMI. And so that's the best explanation I can give for why I have become so involved at this point.
Well, let me thank you for that. And also just point out that NAMI is really all about volunteers. So we have classes, which you've mentioned, and support groups. They're run by volunteers. So I'd like to kind of delve into that a little bit. You live in Robertson County, where there had not been an active NAMI affiliate for many years, and you've been working to start a new affiliate, and I believe you have support groups going on right now.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about a support group, like, how do people learn about it? What's it look like if somebody's watching?
Well, the first thing that we did was to focus on getting a support group started. We were very fortunate to have very active support from our medical center in Springfield, Northcrest Medical Center. We have wonderful space. Our health council was very supportive. So we focused on, and we first applied in April, and by June we had our first support group meeting.
And did you know all the folks that came, or you put information out and got referrals, or how did you get off the ground?
Well, we started out with meeting with other professional groups, of which there are numerous in Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
One individual came, and this is one of my little favorite stories, is I have a good friend who in Springfield who owns a restaurant. She's on our steering committee. I don't speak Facebook very well. And so she just plopped down one day and handed me your tablet. We're going to get you set up on Facebook. So that's how we got NAMI Robertson onto Facebook. While we were sitting over in the corner having that discussion, and she's showing me how to be administrator for the account, and I'm going, there was an elderly lady sitting in the corner across the restaurant, and she gets up, comes over, excuses herself. Did I hear you say NAMI? And we said yes. Well, it turns out that this lady had moved from another state and had an experience with NAMI in Indiana. And so she was very interested in our group. So there's we picked that one up without even trying, as it turned out. We're about to start a real campaign of outreach over this next month in terms of making sure that we're doing radio interviews, newspaper interviews. At this point, it's been mostly contacts with other professionals through our county coalitions. And so that's been it at this point. Starting an affiliate takes some work. It's the little things that matter and that can take up time. So, but we're pleased. We also, August 1st, we were able to activate our helpline. So if someone has a question about our education, advocacy, or support group information, then they can call our helpline number. And that number is going to be out there more over the next few weeks.
It will be that's tremendous, and I'm confident. I should ask, but I'm confident that there is contact information on our webpage for
yes
your support groups.
So it is there at namitan.org.
And there's about 20 affiliates throughout the state, but there is some effort, and it's the passion of individual people like you, Tony, that is behind each and every affiliate. And for those that are not familiar, NAMI is a three-tiered system. There's a national NAMI, which is headquartered in Arlington, Virginia, and they do a lot of things at the national level, like lobby Congress for good laws related to mental health, and they develop partnerships and campaigns, and they support some of these programs, like Tony, you mentioned the family-to-family program, which is new to Tennessee. That's a program from NAMI National. And then this show is presented by NAMI Tennessee, which is a statewide organization that works to support the affiliates, our local chapters around Tennessee. And we also assist with programs and do a convention that I mentioned at the beginning that's coming up next month. So it's local, state, and national. And when you join NAMI, you join all three. And another great thing about NAMI National is they have a webpage, NAMI.org, that has all kinds of information about anything you could think of related to mental health. And so I like to promote that when I can as well. But we have many counties that do not have an affiliate because Tennessee has 95 counties and about 20 of them have affiliates. So I'm so pleased about Robertson County that what you've done. So you talked about the support group. Tell us a little bit about family to family. So you probably came to another class called With Hope in Mind, and we are kind of moving from With Hope in Mind to family, mainly because With Hope in Mind was getting a little dated, and there's a lot of material. You could describe the amount of material. And rather than try to rewrite and revise something that's hundreds of pages, mm-hmm. we thought we would go to the national program, which you just trained on. So tell us about Family to Family.
Well, as you mentioned, I did take With Hope in Mind as a caregiver participant last year. And that, again, that was another milepost on the road to my involvement with NAMI, because I became interested in doing much more after going through that. I found that to be an excellent program in terms of increasing my own knowledge about everything from diagnoses to the pharmacology. And so as soon as I realized that we were going to have family-to-family training for teacher leaders, I immediately wanted to jump on board there. And I was fortunate enough that one of our other volunteers was also eligible to be trained. And so now we have a team. We have a family-to-family team ready to go in Robertson.
Let me jump in on this part. The eligibility, because if somebody's listening, we want new teachers. To be eligible to teach family-to-family, which is the new class, we're not training teachers anymore for With Hope in Mind. That class continues as we do a kind of a phase over, because many people have been trained to teach it. To teach a class, you have to be a caregiver yourself of somebody with a mental health diagnosis. It doesn't need to be a child. It can be a a brother, a mother, a child, a spouse. It could be a coworker. It could be a neighbor. If you're involved in caregiving with somebody that you're close to and regularly involved as a caregiver, then you are eligible to take a class. And after you take a class, that's what's required to be a teacher. So we offer training and we bring people together over a weekend, which you just recently did. Tell us a little bit about that. How do you become a, what was it like? I mean, what did that look like, becoming a family-to-family teacher?
Well, I think it was very important to me that to be with a group that was working on the same goal. That enhanced it tremendously for me, but also the fact that Denise Stewart, who is our volunteer education coordinator, and Judy Evans, the East Tennessee regional coordinator, were there to lead the group. This group bonded, and I know that we're going to be available to support each other across county lines. But I was real pleased that in Robertson's case, that we had two individuals, so that you do have to have two co-teachers to teach this course, and it's over 12 weeks, 2.5 hours once a week for 12 weeks, focusing on the kinds of things that families really need to know in order to work with their loved ones who are living the experience of mental illness. Basics training is coming up also, and you may want to speak to the issue. It's a little bit different in terms of eligibility.
Basics is the cousin of family to family. The difference is basics is geared toward caregivers of a minor child. So family to family is more about having an adult loved one where you're the caregiver. Basics to take the class, you have to have been a caregiver of somebody that's a minor child. So there's more focus on issues related to children and mental illness, and like records and communication with schools and pediatricians and some of those kind of things. A lot of it is similar as far as understanding mental illness and diagnosis and caring for yourself, but more on advocacy for your child, for example.
And it's 6 workshops.
Yes.
Program. And I also understand that it's more or less a peer-led group, in that to qualify to be a teacher leader, you do have to have a minor child or adolescent.
Yes.
And so, and to speak to that particular issue, I was interested in applying. And so Denise called the Nationals and found out that since my son had a diagnosis before he was 18, that I will be eligible to take the training.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that you don't necessarily pick up on in reading the material. I would like to add a little bit to something you mentioned just a few minutes ago, and you were talking about the structure of NAMI across Tennessee and our regional coordinators and the staff that we have in Nashville. And that's just to give kudos to you guys for the support that I've had in this process. It is in order. NAMI is as they say, a class act in my mind, because as I've gotten more and more into it, sometimes it's easy to look at all the bureaucracy involved and say, holy cow, but there's consistency there. We know that the program is going to be the same. If someone moved from Tennessee and went to Idaho or whatever in another state that has, then they know they can go into a class or they can go into a support group, and you're going to see the same kinds of consistency in terms of what the program offers.
Mm-hmm.
So I could not have made it. Anyone listening that's ever worked in a situation in which you're trying to coordinate volunteers and keep volunteers interested in what they're doing, unless somebody has seen a vision and can carry on, usually it takes a little bit more encouragement than just that to keep people going in a support group. And I think the fact that we do have so much available to us is going to prove to us to be very valuable as we go down the line. And before I forget it too, I'd like to mention that even though we're NAMI Robertson, at some point after we filed our applications, we asked if we could also serve Cheatham County. That's just sort of a natural, I worked in state government for years, and Robertson and Cheatham were just always sort of attached at the hip in one way or another. And even though we have the joke is that there are more than one Cheatham County, because the southern part and the northern part are very distinctive communities in a lot of different ways. But there are folks, there's quite a number of folks living in Cheatham County that are much closer to Springfield to come to a support group, for instance, or a class, than they would be to Clarksville for the Montgomery County NAMI or to Davidson County. Mm-hmm. So we're pleased. I've already met with the health council there, and they're very pleased that we're going to be providing NAMI services to Cheatham County as well.
I want to just expand on that and say there's some people, with the stigma being what it is, that they're not comfortable walking in a room related to mental illness where they might see their neighbors. So somebody might be in one county and they'd rather go to the next county,
right,
just for privacy. Now, we hope that stigma will dissipate over time. Years ago, you remember with cancer, there was more stigma. You don't talk about cancer, and now you can. So hopefully in time, it'll be, mental illness will be thought, more normal. I mean, you think about it, the brain is more complex than any other part of the body. Things can go wrong to any organ or part of the body. But people can go to the neighborhood affiliates, and because many affiliates only do a support group once a month, that might not be enough if somebody's right, really struggling. So then you can always look to see what's nearby, and they're all going to be, every affiliate is going to be welcoming to whoever comes in the door. That's something that's special. We've reached the halfway point down a teeny bit more, actually, and you are visiting. We are visiting today with Tony Cowan, and you're listening to the NAMI Radio Hour, which is broadcast live on WRFNLP in Pasco, which is Radio Free Nashville, broadcasting at 107.1 FM and 103.7 FM in Nashville, and online at radiofreenashville.org. And this show is every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Central Time. So please come back. Please help spread the word. And if you'd like to know the topic of upcoming show, just sign up for the NAMI e-news, which is on our webpage, namitian.org. So, Tony, you're going to be teaching your first family-to-family class. Is that scheduled?
It's not scheduled. We're hoping to do that in the winter.
In the winter.
We're just...
Do you get snow in Springfield?
Well, occasionally. Not the kind of snow we got 50 years ago, but no.
Was there a big one?
It's not much of a problem. Oh, when I was a kid growing up, you expected snows all during the winter, but now it's very unusual to have snow.
Yeah. I like when we get a snow day. I'm from Ohio, and I lived in New England. So when there's a snow day, then we close the NAMI office because they don't know how to plow the roads in, right, in Tennessee. Right. So I go out for a drive when there's no cars, and out in the country, it's really beautiful.
Well, one idea that I had was that in the future, we're also becoming, especially in the fall, a lot of entities and agencies tend to have health fairs. So that's another piece of our outreach for the next couple of months.
Great.
We're going to be appearing. In fact, I did a Head Start health fair last week, in which I was able to talk to 150 families that went through the Head Start in Springfield.
Great.
So we'll be doing that. But I said, hey, here's an idea. When a snow is forecast in Springfield, I'll grab my table cover and a table, go to Kroger, and set up out front, because you know everybody's going to be coming in to clear the racks of the bread and milk. So maybe that'd be a good outreach activity for NAMI.
That's creative. That's creative.
Going back again, I'd like to get my own plug in for the upcoming state conference. Just last night, and also for getting online and signing up for the e-news, because that's a really important piece of information for those of us that are out there doing this. I enjoy the newsletter. But last night, since we'd gotten the breakdown, the one I printed out had the breakdown on the workshops, I'm sitting there And any time that I'm going to a conference in which I have difficulty choosing in any particular time slot of own workshops, to me that's good. That's a good thing. Gosh, I can't clone myself and be at both of these, but the fact that there are some really interesting looking workshops coming up, I'm looking forward to the conference.
I'm going to take a minute since you gave me that great segue and kind of go over this real quick. Steve Pittman is a keynote speaker, and he's the immediate past president of NAMI National, and he's also a family-to-family teacher and the president of an affiliate in Orange County, California. And then we have a gentleman that I do know, Steve, and I'm glad he's coming, and Gabe Howard, someone else that I've met, who is involved with a thing called Psych Central. If you are involved with the internet, Psych Central to me is kind of like the WebMD of mental health, and there's all kind of articles about what's going on. And Tony's got a copy of the e-news, which is impressive, you know, for me to see. Appreciate that. And Dr. Stephen Lloyd. Oh, I forgot to mention with Gabe, he's got some interesting podcasts and things too, and he has bipolar disorder himself, and he talks about that. But he's doing a lot of media and advocacy from a peer mental health peer perspective. And Dr. Stephen Lloyd, we're very happy to have him. He is maybe the preeminent physician expert on opiate addiction in Tennessee. And he's formerly a medical director, or I think he was assistant commissioner or something like that with the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse in Tennessee. But he's medical director at Journey Pure, which does treatment. Then I'm not going to read you all the workshops, but Sita Deal, who had my position as NAMI Tennessee Executive Director at one time and was National NAMI Advocacy Director, retired now, moved to Wisconsin, but she'll be back talking about Circle of Care, which is a guidebook for caregivers, and she'll have copies of that. And then we have a program on faith. Monty Burks, who's well-known in mental health and addiction circles, talking about faith-based initiatives around mental illness. And we're going to have a conference presentation on suicide and addiction. And we're going to have something about Hispanic families. We're going to have yoga, about yoga. And Tony, you were talking about self-care.
Yeah.
So something with yoga.
I want some Tai Chi next year. So.
Well, we're going to have a mindfulness. It's not in here, but there'll be a mindfulness activity on Friday morning. We've just added, and there'll be a sound meditation. So we do try to add things like that. But I'm going to mention a previous radio guest talked about goat yoga. I haven't tried that yet, but if you're interested in that, Google that. We've got goat yoga in Tennessee, but it will not be at the convention. The goats wouldn't put on the diapers, and so we said we can't bring them indoors.
Is that the fainting goats? That we have goat
yoga? Yeah. And there's a lot more. We were going to have something on service animals and about women with mental health and leadership. And we're going to have a workshop on trauma.
The CIT.
CIT.
I've been contacted in Robertson about joining a panel. It's going to be emergency room, hospital, law enforcement, interfaith folks, and developing a CIT.
That's tremendous. And it's something
for Robertson
else
County
that NAMI works on. We just had a meeting yesterday. We have a statewide task force and project to enhance and expand CIT in Tennessee. So that's great. And I can give a plug to Robertson. Your sheriff is sending people to the Department of Corrections, Correction Officer CIT training.
That's right.
Which NAMI Tennessee is part of. And so Robertson County and Davidson County are the only two counties taking advantage of that for their jails. Now, others may be doing training, but the state is doing mental health training for correction officers, which we're glad to support and happy to see that. But back to you, Tony. So you seem to have a lot of energy. You're doing a lot of different things for NAMI, and you do some other stuff too. So what keeps you going?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I really, when that switch, self-care switch clicked into place for me, I really was able to get back to things. I brought it down to the kinds of things that I knew I would have time to do that would mean the most to me, and it was back to my writing, and I'm currently editing a book of my collected poetry. That sounds like, that's sort of like getting the Lifetime Achievement Award, I guess, when for an Oscar, you know, it's almost like you're at the end of it, so you're going to have your collected poetry. I'm excited
about
that.
You could have a volume two, couldn't you?
I'm excited about that. That's coming out next year. Yeah, I could always have a volume two. And also music. I have a lot. Robertson County has lots of great musicians live up there who work with all the big names, and it's amazing how often you wind up in a situation in which some very famous musicians are jamming together, and you can be a part of that.
That's so, part of the charm of living in Tennessee, I
absolutely.
Think.
And Springfield is a community that, in fact, I stumble over myself trying to remember which particular coalition or other that I'm meeting with. We've recently started and are partnering with us issues like Laundry Love, which we've offered for the Homeless Coalition. Last month when we did, what we do essentially is through a program, we have people come and they wash their clothes. And we wash their feet if they want to wash their feet. And we had 1,200 loads of laundry washed last month.
Oh, my.
So you know, those kinds of things are all coming together. I mentioned to you earlier today the remote area medical team, which is well known in certain parts of the country, especially up in Appalachia. Well, they're coming for a day of medical treatment for people who do not have insurance, and NAMI's going to be right there as part of that. So I figure if you're going to do it right. You mentioned energy. If that qualifies as energy, then I'm guilty.
A lot of activity. But, that's tremendous.
But let's got a lot hear, of activity.
Let's hear more about the book. Is any of your poetry related to your journey around mental illness?
It is. It is. And I find, especially lately, I tend to, my son has been a subject more and more of late. And so I don't know if you've ever had a poetry reading on the NAMI Radio Hour or not, but you're about to have
one. We've had flute playing and singing, but
okay,
not poetry.
Well, then I'm going to take the advantage of the moment and give you a little bit of background on this. My son, everybody I think in going through the recovery process, and those of you who are aware of NAMI already know about the three phases of recovery and the recovery process. And I confessed earlier that I spent so many years in the anger phase. In some ways you can parallel it with what you go through in going through grief from any loss, but you suffer grief in this process as well. And I spent so many years in the anger phase, and that's another thing that NAMI was able to bring me out of, just by sitting around and talking in a support group, which costs nobody nothing, and which you can talk if you want to, or you don't. You can talk, or you don't have to say anything during a support group. A lot of it just comes through by osmosis, I think. But I learned to turn back to taking care of myself, because then I learned I could take care of my son. And I went through a phase in which I thought I hated my son. And then I finally realized, nope, that ain't true. I'll always love him. I may not like him on any particular day. And so there have been times when I've literally had to hold him to get him through a crisis. I did that. I had a very good friend, a piece that I left out of my previous history, but my very best friend from about the age of 8 for the next 20 years, whose family did not believe in mental illness. It was something you shake off. You know, back then we didn't talk about mental illness as a brain disorder or a brain disease. Yeah, you got, my wife always said when she was dealing with cancer and while she was terminal and my son was at his worst, she said, if you gave me a choice, I'll take cancer any day. You know, over dealing with mental illness.
She saw what he was going through.
Yes, yes. And during this time, he was in and out. He was homeless. one day I'll never forget when we're going to Nashville for chemo and radiation 3 days a week for months and months and months. And we're late one day getting out of chemo, and we stop at the McDonald's on West End Avenue near the I-40 entrance. And there's when you go in there, you come out on the side street, and a lot of the homeless guys stand there and panhandle.
You're talking downtown, like
yeah,
around 12th
on West, West, yeah. And they stand there and panhandle. And we love those terrible little fish sandwiches that you get at McDonald's. And so we were late, and we decided to go through and get us a fish sandwich, and we did. And as we got to the end, coming out onto the side street, there stood my son, at that time probably weighing 90 pounds, his head shaved, and not to demean the Holocaust experience, but, you know, he looked very much the picture that you see of that.
For you guys.
I'll never forget that. And that was a turning point for us in terms of trying to reach out to him again. Unfortunately, his mother died before she was able to see him sort of turning the corner. He came back to me a couple of years ago. We talked. I could see there was an awareness. Finally, it was dawning on him of an awareness of his disease, what he was dealing with, and how it was affecting other people. But I had a friend, up till age 27 when he killed himself when he was 27 years old, and his family didn't believe in mental illness. It was something you shake off. And he, more than anybody else, is the reason I got into this business, got into social work. But I'm going to read a poem, a brief, that I wrote after I had been up actually two nights in a row with my son at one point. How hard it must be, his flickering thoughts searching for a footing in the shifting sands of confusion. Bolts of light come unannounced, looking for space to rest in his restless brain. How can he relax, ever shifting from foot to foot, trying to get his balance? Sometimes it takes only touching the tip of a finger to the wall, as simple as that. Other times it takes a pole jammed into the gears of mania, watching the festival of mental dervishes attacking him. I circle in the perimeter round about him, and I have to wonder if the soft voice of peace will ever whisper him quietly to sleep.
Tony, this is Tony Cowan, and Tony, that's a pretty good portrayal of what it's like for a family member to watch their loved one. I haven't heard anything kind of put like that, but hearing it, and being around a lot of mentally ill people over the years in community mental health and hospitals, you got a good way with words there to help people understand. Because caregivers usually talk more about the frustrating part, like, I can't believe they did this, I can't believe they did that. Like, up all night, walking the floor, playing the TV real loud, I can't sleep. Well, you're coming at it with empathy.
It's a corner. Once you turn that corner, it makes the whole experience totally different. I can say, some of us will make it, some of us won't. But we have to accept that our loved ones are ill. They can be in recovery. They can function. They can do well. They can hold jobs. My son is in school now, and he's working.
I bet you never thought that would happen.
I never thought it would happen. I thought it was all over. He has a one-year-old son. He's the most incredible father I've ever seen. I just think all the time, when I go into my own little pity pile, I think of, gosh, I didn't do that well when I was a father to a one-year-old. And every day I'm just amazed. Now, he'll come in, as I mentioned earlier, he comes in every day and looks out the window. We went through a year process of getting his record expunged. He was arrested numerous times for offenses in which he really should have gone to a hospital. And law enforcement was always very positive. I never had a bad experience with local cops. The joke in the neighborhood became, blue lights are flashing at night. People would look out their windows, oh, it's just the Cowans. And, you know, you have to laugh. You have to have a sense of humor about this, at least in retrospect. But many times, not knowing what else to do, they would charge him with something to get him into jail because they knew he would be safe there. And so it's, yes, it's easy to fall into a pit of despair and anger and stay there. And I've seen people who do that. And do I have the magic pill or the magic potion? No, but I tell you what, if you come to NAMI, if you'll reach out and take advantage of what NAMI has to offer, I can certainly speak from my perspective and guarantee that you're going to have the best chance to make your own recovery.
Well, that is better than any commercial for NAMI I could put together, because it's coming from your experience. But let me ask you this, Tony. Was part of the challenge for you, the challenge I had, which is to separate the illness and some of the behaviors driven by the illness from the person?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you're just acting this way and it's upsetting and annoying.
Yeah.
Well, but a lot of times it's illness driven.
Right. And there's always that challenge of where do you draw the line? Because at some point there has to be, in order for them to function, they have to. I mentioned awareness earlier, and to me that was the critical point. Once my son became aware of the effect of his behavior, you know, forget the pharmacology, forget the pills, and forget all that other diagnostic stuff. I want to know, how is he behaving that affects how he's able to live his life and those around us? And once he became aware of the impact, now that doesn't mean we still don't have our times every day in which we have to settle issues, but that's normal. Everybody does that.
Yep.
And so, but at some point, that was the miracle for us, I guess, if you want to call it a miracle, that he was able to start accepting responsibility. And now something that wouldn't have happened 5 years ago, ever, that he would come back to me and be willing to sit down and analyze. We do this little thing now called the open window, because in the past, if occasionally a window would open and he was receptive to listening to what you had to say. So my wife and I started doing this little thing of a little square with your fingers that would indicate, ah, there's an open window, let's go through it. Now it's gotten to the point that if he wants to talk, he comes in, he looks out, he thinks the FBI's outside. So he looks at me and I do this. That means, do you want to sit down and talk about it? Because I also learned the lesson that you listen. That's the most important thing you can do for somebody suffering, especially if they're in a manic episode. You listen, and maybe you listen all night. Maybe you listen for 2 days. You know, maybe you don't change your underwear for a while, but you listen, and that's become the most. And other times you'll just say, no, okay, Dad, it's all right, I'm okay, and he's okay. So it's a miracle. I thought we were gone. I thought we were never coming back.
Do you think if more families found NAMI that there'd be less people homeless with mental illness on our streets?
I think so, and I think we come back to stigma every time. I think I know we have some veterans in our area, and you cannot, I don't know if it's concern about it being known to their commander or what, but you can't, know personally some veteran families and veterans, and obviously these folks need to be in treatment. And of course, the military is providing. They put a big emphasis now on PTSD and providing services and everything. But those folks are still very resistant to being involved. But many others are too. As I said, just last week, I'm in before a group of community professional people, and when I mentioned, it's like, oh, do I have to figure out what to say to Tony? And so, and I'm not knocking them for that at all. I'm just saying that's the way things are still in our, the stigma issue is still enormous. And so where do we go from here?
Well, keep talking.
Well,
keep
I can
doing
do that.
The outreach that you're doing. But I don't know. I'm going to go out on a limb. It may not be right to say this or not. We have people that are functioning that have a mental health diagnosis, or maybe they've not been given a diagnosis, but they have symptoms.
Right.
But they're functioning with the job or yes. family and school, and but they may be suffering. Maybe their behavior is such that some people think they're odd or eccentric or weird or mm-hmm. what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have other people, though, that the symptoms are such where they're acting in ways that would draw attention of law enforcement, for example, like just or just drawing attention of community. Like if someone with schizophrenia is hearing voices and they're talking to themselves out loud, walking down the street and dressed unusually or something like that, or walking out of a restaurant without paying, or trespassing, different. So some people behave in ways that are maybe a little further beyond what society would expect, draws more attention. Let's just say that.
Right.
With family support, I think that we could decrease a lot of that. But what happens, in my opinion, is the family gets frustrated, or the person, like your son, you said one day a switch came on, so he probably believed he didn't have a problem, and it was the problem was other people.
Right.
But when it gets so frustrating between whether it's the one with the symptoms frustrated or the family frustrated, when they've had it, and I'm out of here, if I'm not that functional person with the job and income, then I'm in a, you know, I'm going to be in bad areas or homeless or in jail. I think NAMI is a way to help this. And I'm looking for ways to help more people to know about it and grow our support groups and affiliates. So what you're doing is the motto. I hope that if we even have one person that heard you today or meets you and says, you know, I could do that too.
That would be great.
I've experienced some of what Tony's experienced, and I would like to make a difference too. So I'm really glad that you came on and are sharing these things, because I think we can help more. And we have only about 2 minutes left, so I want to leave that for you. Anything we did not talk about that you'd like to share, this time's yours.
A great way to pass the ball back there, Jeff. I think I'm looking at my notes. I think something that might be interesting to consider in the future for another, just a suggestion for another episode of the show, would be, and I don't know, you know, as you say, if we even have one person, that would be great. That's what I say for our support groups. If we just have two or three people show up, that is what you were looking for. If you make the difference in one person's life, but we might go a little bit deeper into forming an affiliate and what's involved in that, or maybe that's less appropriate for a show like this.
No, that's good. And I bet you would be willing to talk to people in other communities.
Yes.
If they were considering that. Can people reach you through the webpage? Robertson, NAMI Robertson on NAMITN.org, or you can always contact me, info@NAMITN.org.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here. And check out the convention September 27th, 28th. And next week, back with the new show.
Thanks for joining us today for the NAMI Radio Hour, exploring the world of mental illness and its impact on the family, society, and the individual. This broadcast comes your way live from the studios of WRFN Radio Free Nashville Pasquo each Wednesday at 10 a.m. Central Time. If you missed the show today or would like to hear the archives, link to podomatic.com and search for the NAMI Radio Hour. Again, that's podomatic.com and search for the NAMI Radio Hour. You can also keep up to date with the show's upcoming guests on the NAMI Tennessee Facebook page. The NAMI Radio Hour is a production of NAMI Tennessee. To contact the show, email to info@namitn.org or call 1-800-467-3589. That's 800-467-3589. We'll see you next week right here for another broadcast of the NAMI Radio Hour. Until then, remember, you are not alone, and don't get stuck in the trials of life. Keep moving on.
You are listening to Radio Free Nashville, WRFN LP, Pasco.
If you're tired of radio stations that all sound alike, do something